So, Ed, how's it going?
Real good. How's it going with you, buddy?
Yeah, not too bad. Or should I call you Captain Barker?
Yes. The proud owner of a boat, a sea vessel. Well, a canal
vessel. It's certainly not a seafaring.
Do you want to know the top speed?
Go on then. What's your top speed?
4 knots.
Whatever that is.
It's not fast.
So shall we perhaps go back to the start here and explain to the lovely listeners, all three of them, what you've actually gone and done?
So I had a crisis, which led to me purchasing a narrow boat.
And for those our international listeners, because I do feel like a narrow boat's quite a somewhat uniquely British thing.
Canals aren't ubiquitous, are they? Because we basically built canals, you know, in the Industrial Revolution, and then trains came along. So everywhere else that, you know, was catching up was like, well, all right, we're not building canals.
Yeah. But, okay, we'll get on to that because I've got some questions about that as well. But so for those who don't know, a canal boat is, how do you describe a canal boat to someone who's never seen one before?
It's a boat that's been designed for still water. Yeah, no great speed. It's literally just a home designed to float.
Yeah, particularly narrow waterways, right?
Yeah.
So the UK has quite a network of these canals. You shared a map of them with me recently. Okay, so let's start with that. You're currently on a canal down in the southwest of Britain, right?
Yeah, about half an hour north of Bristol.
Yeah, and from the map, it seems like that canal is a dead end, as in it doesn't actually connect up with anything else.
Right, so it does. The rivers are waterways, and the rivers connect a lot of the canals. So I'm not stuck.
But, oh,
you can't traverse them throughout the whole year. So some rivers will be a bit too fierce for that 4 knot engine. so you can only, you know, they'll let you know if it's unnavigable.
I'm just imagining, you know, that film Perfect Storm, where they're out at sea and there's a bit of a storm.
You imagine that with me?
Yeah.
I think pirates will get me, you know, very, very unlikely inland. But I think knowing my luck, it'll happen.
The Somalian pirates just...
yeah.
On some canal in the Midland somewhere.
And then the news article is literally the last thing I expected to happen.
So it sounds like you've got a bit more mobility than I thought, because I was wondering that if you get on a particular canal system, or say if you don't want to wait for the rivers to be stiller so you can pass them, what do you have to do then? Do you have to get on the back of a truck or something?
Yeah, or you can have a pilot boat, and that's basically a bigger boat with more engine, which can pull you, you know, against currents and stuff.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah.
So it's like a taxi for your canal boat.
Yeah, literally, you know, it's like RAC, but it'll be, what, CAC, canals and... What does RAC stand for, Ben?
No one knows, actually. It's a little known fact there.
Yeah. Also, good little fact for you, say what you like about Birmingham, there's more canals in Birmingham than Venice.
Yeah, I know where I'd rather be, though.
No. People just go to Venice because of the length of the canals.
Nothing
else. What do you think then? Because I think you simultaneously find my little activities like this hilarious and concerning.
Well, I often reply to whatever you send me with, why do you try to upset me, or do you enjoy upsetting me? But you'll notice I didn't this time.
This is a financially expensive prank on you.
Yeah. So, well, hang on. Let's dial it back, because I have my thoughts, obviously, when you first announced this and when you said you're going to go see this canal boat. But so what are your motivations for doing this?
Just like the water.
No, you've never, ever spoke about being in the water, swimming, anything like that.
Yeah. Can't get enough of it.
Nonsense.
Right. But, well, one of the issues is that Bristol, you know, they call baby London. Like, house prices are pretty much the second most expensive outside of London. Kind of fed up of throwing away my money as rent. You know, so I saw this as a way of getting on the housing ladder. Plus, I genuinely do want to be next to the water, because I talk about that all the time.
Yeah, I mean, ever since I've known you, you've been like, I just want to get my sea legs, Ben. This terra firma is just holding me down.
Yeah, and people are like, oh, Ed, stop going on about it. Bloody old water Ed, watery Ed.
That's
what I say.
Yeah.
And the self-sufficiency aspect. You know, when you go camping, you make a fire, you know, you set up everything yourself. There's a kind of like a real sense of pride and, you know, it's nice just, you know, getting back to basics.
That'll get annoying after a while, though, you realise. People like camping because of the novelty, but long-term, things like that get annoying quite quickly.
So I think, you know, you can do it to the extent that you want. Like, some people will gather firewood off the towpath to, you know, that's the only fuel they use for their boat. Whereas, you know, I'll just buy big bags of coal. There's lots of bits like that.
Yeah. So you're obviously buying it now at the height of summer, which is fine. But when it gets freezing, did you not think it's going to get annoying?
You'd be surprised. I mean, you know, as long as you've got coal with you, you know, it's always hot enough. People always have the doors open and the windows. They say it gets too hot in the winter.
That's just how they continue having a secondhand market for these things, Ed.
What's that?
The boat owners are telling you, oh yeah, it's so hot all the time. We always have the windows open. And it's just because if they told you the truth, the secondhand market would collapse.
I'll have you know that this old fella, we'll call him Graham, that sold me the boat.
Because that's his name.
He didn't have enough energy for it anymore. You know, it was just a nice, honest sell. It was fine.
Yeah, because he's sick of the pain in the ass of getting up at 5 every morning during winter and putting the fire on.
Would you not want to do that, then? Would you not have a fireplace in your home?
Well, not as the primary source of heat. We did actually look at the house at one point, an estate agent. It was a back boiler. For those who don't know, it's a big fireplace, and above the fireplace is essentially a boiler. And then that the hot water from that boiler will circulate around the house. And the guy was basically like, oh, it's fine. You just get up at 5 o'clock every morning, start a coal fire, and then you can just go back to bed and the house is nice and warm. And I'm like, yeah, sounds great. That sounds class. Can't wait. And yeah. Needless to say, we didn't go for that place.
How much is it to sort of kit out a house with a whole new heating system?
Well, with central heating, like gas-fired or oil-fired, yeah. Probably is like thousands and thousands of pounds. I'm not really sure, to be honest. So, Ed, the elephant in the room as well about this thing, for me at least, is you're about 12 foot tall?
Oh, yeah, we don't talk about this.
Okay, so you're about 12 foot tall, and the last time I checked, these boats were quite small. And in fact, you sent me a video of the tour of the place. And your neck didn't seem too straight.
Yeah, well, you know, listen, right, Ben, what I'm doing is I'm increasing the amount of yoga I do to match the level of back bend that I will undergo.
You know, you can't bullshit out this one, I'm afraid, Ed.
Do you want to know? You'll find this funny. So I thought to myself, you know, when I'm in a boat, I'm rarely am I standing up. I'll just be walking around, sitting in one place, sitting in another place. The one place I'll be standing up is cooking.
Yeah.
Do you know what I did, Ben? I bought myself a little swivelly bar stool. So I just rotate, spin around in the kitchen.
So you're going to be sat down while cooking?
Yeah. Life of luxury.
Where do I start with what you've just said? Do you think it's going to get really annoying, though? Just the whole not being able to stand up thing?
I mean, look, yeah. I think there'll be times where I'd be like, okay, this is annoying. But I think that's the price you pay for accumulating wealth and living a life on the waterways. But there's two parts I can stand up in, the bow and the stern. And I know you're going to say, yeah, but aren't they open anyway? No, Ben, they've got pram covers. I can stand up.
Okay. You've got me there. Me sat in my home where I can stand up in any room I want.
You were telling me that if you were to come over, so I've got a guest bed on there, right? And yeah. You say you wouldn't want to stay on a boat. You'd rather have the luxury of an Airbnb or something.
Does that offend you, though?
Well, I thought it'd be interesting to have the novelty.
I mean, I'll visit you on it, but...
It's just the sleeping part.
It's not so much the sleeping part. It's just that I'm not saying it's tiny, but I'm saying that if you knew a friend who lived in a studio apartment, right, and they invited you to stay over the night, and you were basically, like, sleeping on the sofa at the end of their bed...
Oh, no, it's opposite ends of the boat, Ben.
Yeah.
No hanky-panky allowed.
Well, it's just a bit small, Ed.
You're not wrong.
How long do you think you can live in it?
3 years.
Why 3 years? That's an oddly specific number.
Well, that is when I finish my PhD and when I will have paid it off.
So as soon as you've paid it off, you think you're going to flog it?
No, that's the minimum amount of time I live in it. Yeah, and then, I haven't told you about canal plan stage two.
Go on.
Right, so... If you get a plot of land and you put alpacas on that land, you have them for a little while, you can make the case that they require 24-hour supervision, and then you can build a dwelling, and then you can move in and get residential planning permission. So find a plot of land, buy the canal, put alpacas on it, residential, sell the boat, riverside property.
I don't even know. God, I don't even know where to start with this plan. Yeah, go for it. You know what?
All you have to do is get up at 5 a.m, eat the alpacas, go back to bed, and then you're away.
You know what? You do that, Ed, because it'll make for good content for the podcast. Go for it. More than happy for you to do that.
Do you want an alpaca jumper?
Yeah, I've heard they're quite nice. They're quite expensive, right?
Yeah, not if you own them, Ben.
I'm reminded of that David Mitchell, the Mitchell and Webb look sketch with the farmer.
Comes out the f***ing ground.
I'll put a link to that in the old show notes there. So you're doing a bit of work to the old narrow boat as well, right?
Yeah, done a bit of painting, attaching some solar panels, got a little 4G router installed. It's all good. All very, very much out of my depth in all of it.
Yeah.
Going to do some tiling next week.
So have you got the solar panels already?
Yeah, they're just behind me. I'll take a picture. You can put those in the show notes too.
Okay. But they're not on top of the boat yet.
No.
So they're not doing much solar powering at the moment then?
No.
Do you know what you're doing? Do you know how to hook up a solar panel? I wouldn't have no idea.
I could go into Ben. I've researched it. I can tell you anything about solar panels, but it's just not going to be entertaining.
Yeah. You did ask me not to ask you about the price.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's a free electricity.
So what is, like, all right, let's not get into, like, you know, dollars and cents here, but what's the kind of return that you're expecting to get on this? Is it like immediate? Is it just for 3 weeks during summer you actually make anything back on them, or what's the story?
Well, I mean, the mooring I've got hasn't got electric hookup.
Yeah.
So I'd need some power source anyway. Don't want to have the diesel engine on every day getting power. I've got enough solar panel wattage to sort of satisfy all my energy requirements in the winter. So you get about 20% of the power in winter.
20% of what?
20% of the power you'd receive peak summer.
Okay. And you obviously store that, like, you're not drawing power from the panels in real time.
No, yeah, you got a big battery bank.
Yeah, and you're constantly trickle charging some batteries, right?
Yeah.
And how many batteries have you got?
4 Trojan T105s. Who's asking?
There you go, listeners, if you want to look that up.
880 amperes, Ben.
Okay, and, like, I've got no real concept of this. It's very hard to kind of conceptualize.
So your car battery will probably be 100 amperes?
Right.
This is about, you know, 8 or 9 car batteries.
Okay, but that's still quite hard to conceptualize, because I also realize that when the car's running, you've got the alternator, which basically provides...
Yeah,
so it's a main line, right? So
this will be like laptop 8 hours a day, lighting for the whole boat, music, router, and you can run that for 2 days straight. You can run that for 4 days straight to deplete the batteries.
Okay, but you obviously, another thing about batteries, especially the big lead acid batteries, is that you'd never want to actually deplete them, right? Because it's really bad for the health of the battery.
Well, Ben, these are deep cycle flooded batteries.
What the hell does that mean?
Designed to be depleted to 50% regularly.
50% still quite high, though? I don't know.
You can go to 80 safely. 50 okay. is like what they're made for.
And have you got a way of measuring this?
Well, the Victron Smart Solar Bluetooth connection connects to my phone.
Hang on, we're sponsored by them this week, right?
Oh, yeah. Victron are brilliant.
Yeah, if you want to reach out, what are they called? Victron.
You can delete this bit, but basically...
I'm definitely not going to delete this bit.
The voltage of the batch. We talked about cereal for 20 minutes. This is prime.
Yeah, exactly. This is intellectual.
When you deplete the charge of a battery, just the voltage goes down.
Yeah.
And the manufacturer provides, you know, voltages at specific levels of discharge. So you basically pop that into your app. The app tells you, okay, you're at about 50%, 60%, and you can set up alarms and stuff so you don't go below.
But that's measured in real time as well. You're not like going out with your multimeter and writing it down on a piece of paper, are you?
Yeah, that just gives you an alert on your phone.
Okay, that's quite cool. That's quite good. This is like, you know, canal boats for the 21st century. And I haven't seen like some of the canal boat owners out there. I think you're probably like on the very cusp of technology for canal boats.
A lot of people, you know, try to escape the rat race, you know, off grid. You know, they're very much back to basics, you know, picking up the firewood off the side.
Yeah.
You know, not talking to anyone. But I feel like I can get on well with those people. I'll be the bridge to technology for them.
To the modern world.
Yeah.
The other big question that I've got, let's talk Blackwater and Greywater, Ed.
Blackwater. What?
Blackwater, Greywater. Do you not know the difference? Oh, Ed, you should really know this.
Something to do with diesel?
No. So Greywater is used sink water, used shower water.
I'm with you.
Blackwater is used toilet water.
Oh, Ben, I had a bit of a mishap with this the other day.
Well, let's explain how it works first before you explain how you went wrong with it.
All right. Go on then. Are you talking about the poop water and the shower water?
Yeah, what do you do with it? How do you deal with it?
Well, this boat has a pump-out system. So a lot of them, you have cassette toilets. You literally poop. It all goes into a little tank below, and then you have to empty that every week or so.
Yep.
But this has got a bigger poop tank. What's this, black water?
Yep.
Yeah. And then, you know, once a month or so, you go pay a man, he pumps it out.
Oh, right. So you don't actually have to deal with it any of that yourself?
No, and it's once a month.
You say that now, Ed, it's once a month, right? But you're like 12 foot tall, so...
Well, that was for a couple. That was for a couple. So I don't know. I'm large. I don't know if I'm two poops large.
I think you might be, you know.
Yeah?
Odds on, I'd say, yeah.
Odds on. I bet you an alpaca jumper, I don't poop as much as a couple who's 80.
All right, so I didn't realise that. So that's quite good then. I mean, obviously you're paying someone for it, but I'd probably rather pay someone for it than have to deal with a cassette every, like, week.
Yeah, it's like £10 a pop. And I asked myself, I was like, if I'm walking along carrying my own poop to empty and someone said, hey, I'll get rid of that for you for a tenner. Absolutely.
100%. Yeah, easy tenner spent that, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah. And then, grey water is like everything from the sink and the shower.
Yeah.
This is where my mishap happened, Ben, because I didn't quite understand how this all worked in the boat yet. Did some painting, washed my brushes.
Yeah.
And I was like, what's that? What's that little noise? Like, psh, 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 psh. I was like, what's that? Look out the window. Nice big white cloud of canal. So I was freaking out, trying to go to the outside of the boat to see where it was all going. And I was just about seven baby cygnets all coming in this direction, drinking the water. And I was like, get away.
Oh, you're going to get done for eco-terrorism or something.
Well, yeah. To anyone listening on the canals, I apologise.
It's the growing pains, isn't it?
It's all right. They don't have the internet, Ben.
Yeah, they don't. That's true. So go straight out into the canals then.
So would you never do it? You don't think it'd be for you?
Well, we did the van thing, obviously. We lived in a van for 3 months on the continent doing cycling all over France and whatnot and other countries. And we had a cassette toilet. That was a pain in the neck, but... it was kind of better than not having a toilet at all in the van.
And how did you shower?
We had a grey water tank as well, which you could just kind of empty wherever was appropriate, down a drain or whatnot. So whenever you park up, you'd put the grey water tank out underneath the outlet and it would all go to there. And that was fine. I mean, I'd sooner live in a van again, I think, because at least you've got the mobility, well, more mobility, I'd say, than a boat that goes, what, 4 knots?
So you're saying that's the trade-off. It's like you get to go wherever you want.
Yeah. You
know, but you've got this rubbish stuff to deal with. You're saying canal boat, you've got still got the rubbish stuff, but you can only move it 4 knots.
Yeah. And another thing is, as well, is in the van that we had, we could stand up. And not being funny, I think that is such a big quality of life thing, and that would just drive me up the wall.
Yeah. But I think it's one of those things that I'm just, dealing with. I haven't found out a problem so far. But
you will get used to it, by the way, until the day you don't. So what I mean by that is...
I'll get used to it with my scoliosis.
Well, that, and also the fact that, you know, you'll start getting good at it. You won't, you'll go through a period where you don't hit your head on anything. And then one day, you'll have a massive head crack just when you forget.
Oh.
It will happen.
Well, I did that yesterday. I've got a big lump on my head.
You've already got one?
No, in my house.
Oh, and you cracked then?
I walked into the edge of the door frame.
Oh, wow.
No, the door.
So you've still got the crack then for a little while longer?
Yeah, 2 weeks of bliss with this old beauty.
Are you in the crack then now?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you'd be on your boat.
No, I need to get the solar installed for power.
Oh, okay. So when's the actual move-in date then? A few weeks or something?
The 14th, Ben.
Well, we all wish you very well on that, Ed, and you're going to have to keep us up to date with how it's going. And
this is the last podcast ever recorded. What do you think of anti-maskers? I know it's not such a big thing here, but it does exist.
What is there to think of them, really, though? They're just a bunch of morons. I mean, it's the same thing I think about, like, any anti-science people. They're just idiots.
But what, yeah, what about them arguing it's their choice?
But it's not their choice, right? It's you've talked to me about this in the past, about the whole like liberty of the self and liberty of the group, right? It's
yeah,
your freedom kind of ends where it steps on other people's freedom, right? And if it means you giving up some freedom so everyone else on the whole can have more freedom, i.e. more health and more...
Yeah, it's like freedom utilitarianism.
Yeah, you've got more, you know, you've got more safety to leave the house and not die.
So you're saying if masks only existed to protect yourself, you wouldn't have a problem with it?
Sorry, I don't understand what the question is there.
So if masks, let's say you couldn't give the virus to anyone else, but the mask stopped you getting the virus from other people, you'd be like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, then they can do what they want. I don't really care if morons catch these things and die. Because you're never gonna be able to cut. This is the thing we've spoke about at length in the past as well. Is it a certain point in your life, you've just got to accept that you can't convince certain people of anything?
Yeah, and I'm definitely moving that direction.
Yeah, these kind of people. It's the same with politics. It's the same with. It's the same with, like, I don't know, down to like things like musical taste. If you like one type of band, I'm never going to ever be able to convince you that they're rubbish or that you should like this other band instead if you don't like them.
But then bands are a taste, aren't they? And like quite often the things you're arguing about, like with masks, you know, is logical.
Yeah, but then it kind of almost dips its toe in the taste world where it's all about being in little groups where they're like, we know better than these lot are idiots. And it's...
Yeah, so of course you like masks if you believe in science.
The thing is as well is with a lot of the mask, anti-mask people, albeit it seems to be mostly an American phenomenon from what I've seen. A lot of the reasons isn't necessarily, I don't think it works. A lot of it's just because, well, I'm an individual. I don't have to do that. You can't make me do that. And I don't really get that. Like, it's a strange hill to die on for me. I mean... It's absolutely no like effort whatsoever to put a mask on when you go shopping or whatever. It's not.
That's the thing. It's not even a big. That, you know, if it was like, okay, in order to protect yourself, everyone has to wear big pink dresses.
Yeah.
Like, oh God, that, you know, I feel a bit uncomfortable doing that. And it's like, okay, yeah, still protecting people, but you know, there's a legitimate reason.
Yeah, but even then, everyone would be wearing a pink dress, and I wouldn't care. I'd be like, oh well, sound. Everyone's wearing one, whatever. Like,
yeah, it becomes normalized. Like. Very quickly, you know, since the mandatory mask wearing in retail became a thing, it only took me about 3 days to stop being shocked by it. I was like, oh, that's just a person.
But I have got a few things to say about that. So I think most people now have kind of got the point and they kind of understand how these things work. But the people that walk around with the face mask just covering their mouth and not their nose, I mean, who are these people, Ed?
That's, you know, like in school where people wear ties, but they just have that little tiny little bit.
Yeah.
2 inches of tie poking out the top. It's just like, oh, I'm doing it. I'm wearing it, aren't I?
Yeah. It's this kind of half-assed attitude, right? But like, oh, you just want to punch them in the face. So there's those kind of people. And then there's my favorite one I've seen so far, which I've seen two instances of it. So we were in a service station, and I asked the lady who was working in Marks & Spencer, do you know where the nearest cash point?
Wait, which service station?
It was Knutsford, for what it's worth.
Oh, great.
Are you going to write that down?
Yeah. Carry on. I just love a good service station. Sorry.
Okay. So I asked the lady in Marks & Spencer, where's the nearest cash point? And what do you think she does, Ed? She's got a face mask on, so she obviously walks up to me, pulls her face mask down, and then proceeds to reply to me. I'm like, oh my days. This is why we've got the virus, because people just don't get it at all.
I thought it'd be great. I thought she was going to pull her face mask down and then point to the direction.
And then I also saw, we were on the train coming back from Whitley Bay, well, Newcastle, the other day, which we'll talk about in a minute as well. And we were on the train and we were opposite some girls on the train, and one of them needed to cough or sneeze. I can't remember which it was. And obviously they pulled their face mask down to do that. Oh my days.
So yeah, I mean, I was picking up some paint and wicks in Wicks. How's that Africa? Wicks.
What?
You know the adverts where they go Wicks?
No, I don't, but go on.
All right. We'll put a link to that.
Okay.
Yeah, she pulled her face mask down, rubbed her face, and then carried on scanning my items.
Lovely. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you meant to say? You can't say anything, though, can you?
Like, oh, do you want to... Sorry, you just touched your face.
You can't tell people, unfortunately.
But equally, you know, I don't like confrontation. So I'll just, you know, scrub down my paints.
Just let them get on with it. I don't think there's much more to be said about the whole coronavirus thing.
However, I wanted to briefly touch upon 5G conspiracies theories.
Again, what is there to say? Just a bunch of morons, right?
So you don't want to go into it?
Well, we can, but what is there to say?
Yeah.
Cast your mind back, Ed. Cast your young mind back, Ed. It's the 14th of April, 2017. A young Edward Barker and his friend has just embarked on a journey. What journey was that?
Can I just say, right, I think this is impressive. It doesn't matter how long it takes. It's impressive.
Okay. I cycled
the breadth of the entire United Kingdom.
Well, okay, coast to coast, not actually the breadth of the United Kingdom really, though, is it?
Well, that's the breadth.
It depends where you're measuring it, though.
Yeah, if I measured me around my waist, that's my breadth.
Anyway, right.
Thinnest point.
So for those who don't know, coast to coast, you cycle from Whitehaven to anywhere basically on the northeast of England, typically Sunderland, Whitley Bay, Tynemouth, all that area, it's all good. Wherever you finish, as long as it's coast on the other end. So you set off on the 14th of April, 2017, with your friend Tom.
That's right. Who, can I say for the record, I was in a racing, I had a racing bike that, you know, had no room for pannier racks. So he carried everything.
Right, okay, so, that's fine. You're digging your own grave here, but we'll carry on. And you took how many days to finish it, Ed? How many days was it?
Was it three or four?
Let me have a little count here. So we've got coast to coast, day one with Tom. Coast to coast, day two with Tom. Oh, coast to coast, day three with Tom. Yeah. So that appears to me 3 days.
Well, look, you know, you got to stop to smell the flowers. Otherwise, life's not worth living.
Mate, you were doing the gardening.
That's crack.
So anyway,
Ben. What did you do?
So you did this adventure, and at the end of it, I was quite proud of you. We were texting back and forth saying, was it good? You know, was it difficult? Whatnot. And then I mentioned, oh, wait, you did it in 3 days. And you were like, Ben, please, Ben. You could never do it in one day. That would be insane to do it in one day. You could never do it in one day. And in fact, you actually put some money on the line. I believe you put £5, £10. I can't remember.
Did I?
Yeah, I think you did.
Oh, yeah. I'll honor that. Yeah, okay.
So that was 2017, Ed. Now, fast forward to 2020, the 25th of July. What did I do, Ed? What did I do?
You did the coast to coast.
Yeah, how many days did I take?
Just the day.
Yeah, just the day.
I don't know what's more impressive, the fact you did it in a day or the fact that you held on to this for 3 years.
As soon as you said it, I immediately filed it away in my brain and thought, right, we're coming back to this one.
And you texted early in the day, you're just like, oh, I've got a little treat for you later, Eddie. Little treat.
So yeah, we did it in a day. So as a kind of a breakdown for those who, again, don't know the coast to coast, it's a cycle route from one coast to the other, and it is in total, it's about 230k 220k, it depends where you're obviously finishing and what route you take. So we did that in one day, and Ed did it in about 3 weeks.
So how long did that take you? 10 hours?
Yeah, it was about 10 hours pedaling time, but we set off at about 7:05 in the morning, and we finished at about, I think it was just before 9, basically. So I think it was about 8:30 we finished.
So all the sunlight, really?
Basically, yeah. It was, I'm not going to lie, it was very hard. As you'll know, it's there's some big old hills, especially through the Pennines and things like that.
Did you do the, is it something Heart? Just a really long...
Heartside, yeah.
Heartside.
I'll link to the segment in the show notes.
I enjoyed that.
You enjoyed it. It's a particularly long climb.
Yeah, I don't generally enjoy climbs, you know, that are steep, but it was just steady, 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 and I found it really satisfying.
Yeah, I will add that you were talking about no panniers and whatnot, but we had no panniers, and I was on a race bike as well. So, yeah,
yeah, I was just saying, you know, I felt bad because my friend.
Was he doing all the carrying? Is he a stronger cyclist than you then?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Would you consider doing something like that again?
I would, but, you know, I would do it more intensive. I mean, like, since January, I've really got into running.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've sort of, you know, developing at a pace. I'm sort of, I know better how to train myself now. So I think I would, you know, have a much more structured lead up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't think I could match your level of pushing yourself.
On a bike, at least.
It's just a lot.
It is a lot. You kind of get into the habit of it. So what I will say is, everyone thinks that you have to eat a lot throughout the day. So you're constantly eating, just because if you can do 100 miles, you can do 200 miles. It's just about fueling yourself consistently throughout the day. Right. If your legs have got it in you, you just need to keep eating to keep the legs moving, essentially. But what it does mean is that you get absolutely sick of eating. Like towards the end of the day, any food I was looking at, I was just like, oh, I can't even think worse than eating.
So
that
can you run me through what you ate?
So I had in my top bar bag about 3 or 4 gels, which are just like energy gels. I had a bag of fruit pastels. I had a bacon buddy. I had some chips. I had a panini. Oh. I had like so many bars of things to eat. I had a couple of flapjacks.
How many calories is that in the day?
Well, I burnt 5,000 calories doing the actual journey. And I should think that I probably did get to 5,000 calories consumed during the day. But I was just so sick of eating. And you get so sick of sweet stuff as well. Because that's what most snacks on the bike are. They're just sweet stuff. So
that just, you want an immediate fuel source.
Yeah. Yeah. I realized that there's a great picture of you at the top of Heartside doing some sort of Slavic crouch.
Yeah. Did you do one?
No, I didn't. No. But I'll be sure to put that in the show notes if anyone wants to see Ed at the top of Heartside after his long climb doing a little Slavic crouch there.
A more youthful Ed.
Yeah, full of hope. Still had dreams.
Dreaming of canal boats and water.
Yeah. So you're going to go back and do it in a day?
Do you know what? I'm going to file it away.
3 years from now, you're going to come back and you're going to be like, Ben, remember when you said you did it in a day? Well,
I did it. I could beat your time. That would be hard.
I am noticing as well that you don't even have cycling shoes on.
Oh, no, I don't do any of that. Oh,
man.
I'll tell you what, Ben. I'll tell you what. I'll do it on a fixie.
No, you won't.
That will be mine.
No, you won't.
I will.
You won't, though. You just won't.
I will.
You
heard it here.
I do fear that you suffered from none of the gear, still no idea. Because I also saw in the description for your rides that you're, you said gooch status, severely perturbed.
I don't remember that. Oh, God, yeah. I think the first half of the second day, you know, was just getting used to the pain.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I had one of those saddles that it's just like a guillotine. Have you got a Brooks?
No, I didn't use the Brooks in the end. I just used a Brooks, for those who don't know, is like a leather saddle and it kind of molds to your ass a bit.
Hold up. We cannot let this podcast go without bringing up the wax chain. I want you
to
walk me through the things you had to purchase and the effort you had to go to.
It's really not
to
that
get
hard.
A chain.
Okay, so in my YouTube video watching, I watch a lot of quite obscure YouTube channels mostly about cycling. And there's a guy, I think he's called OzCycle. I'll put a link to his channel in the show notes. And everyone kind of worships this guy as the waxed chain guru. Everyone follows his recipe. Everyone follows his technique.
Recipe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the idea behind it is normally on a bicycle chain, you use like lubricant, which is just like a squirty oil stuff out of a bottle. And it, as most people will know...
I don't know what lubricant is.
All right, okay. And then, as most people will know, it makes your bike chain absolutely filthy. Like, you'll see black chains, and even if you come as close as looking at it, you'll end up with black hands just looking at it. So what this guy does is, and a lot of people have done this for a long time, but a lot of people follow this guy's recipe in particular. So what you need to do, Ed, you get a new chain, right? I'll walk you through the whole process.
Yeah.
You get a new chain. New chains come with a slight bit of lubricant on them already out of the box. So you need to get rid of that. So step one, you need...
You've got to make it less lubricated.
Yeah, before you put it on the bike and wax it. So step one is you're going to have 3 jars, right? First jar is got petrol in it, yeah?
Of course, yeah, petrol.
Yeah, you put the chain in the petrol and you leave it there for a while, and that should strip off quite a lot of lubricant. Second one, you're going to put it in a jar of degreaser, engine degreaser I used. Okay, that gets rid of some more of the lube. Finally, you're going to put it in some terps, some methylated spirit, separate jar. So you go, there's three jars, three liquids. Okay? After that, you've got a chain.
Three mistakes.
This is so boring to everyone, but I'm gonna plow ahead. We've started, so we're going to finish. So then you've got a dry chain with no lube on it. Then what you want to buy is an Argos 10-pound slow cooker, right? A little one, just 1 litre. You want 500 grams of paraffin wax, and you want 50 grams of PTFE powder. He recommends 1.6 microns, but you can't really get that. So you mix it all up. You put all of the candle wax basically in your slow cooker with your PTFE, and then you put your chain in there for 10 minutes, give it a good swirl around. I've found, Ed, that if you turn the slow cooker off before you pull the chain out and let the wax ever so slightly harden, not too much though, pull it out, and then you're good to go. Because if you pull it out when it's too hot, the wax just falls straight off it, and you've basically just got a dry chain then. You don't want that.
No, you don't want to look an idiot, do you?
No, you don't. You really don't. Anyway, and what you end up with is a chain that lasts supposedly three times as long, and it's always perfectly clean. So you can always touch it, and you never get black hands.
And that brings you joy?
I can't describe the amount of joy that brings me.
You go and try.
Much joy. So much joy. It fills my heart. I honestly can't describe.
More joy than Aldi?
On par.
Oof, wow. Yeah.
Well, it does come in handy though, because if you get a flat tire, and I did on the coast to coast, you can take your chain off and your fingers aren't filthy.
I mean, yeah, I'm a big fan. We talked about this before. I'm a big fan of little things that make you happy.
Yeah.
So I'm happy for you. I just think it's a shame that you have to do these things.
We both make each other upset in different ways, don't we?
Yeah. I want to talk about going for holidays in the UK. What are your thoughts? Because obviously with the epidemic, people aren't, you know, you don't want to risk your plane tickets getting cancelled. Do you like holidaying in the UK?
Well, yeah. Another thing that we like to do, again, really boring, is we've got a book, and it's the 100 Greatest Climbs of Britain. 100 Greatest Cycling Climbs, that is. So we'll often pick off a location in the book and we'll go holiday there and take our bikes.
I think that's a great thing to do. I love little things like that. How many have you done?
Out of the book, we've done 44 now. So there's 100 in the book.
Are they quite spread out?
Yeah, I mean, they're all over the UK. The Scotland ones are particularly difficult because they're all completely spread out and you can't really make a loop of any of them. Each one's kind of a separate effort. I think it's about five.
So you want to go on a sort of a proper cycling holiday to go up
yeah,
there.
Yeah. And there's a bunch in the southwest that we've not even touched. We've done all of the ones in the southeast apart from one, which is Mott Street, I think. That's what they call it.
Was that particularly hard?
It's not hard. It's just that we never got around to doing it when we lived in London. We've done all the ones in the Midlands apart from two, and they're over where your folks are from. Big Sioux.
Ironbridge,
and the other one, I can't remember the name of, Jiggers Bank? Jiggers something or other.
I think I've done the Ironbridge one.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah, probably. Most of them are. If you do all 100 of them and you contact the author, he'll give you a little golden pin, like a little golden badge.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah. So there's light at the end of the tunnel, even if it is a tiny golden pin.
But even if it just means something to you and Chloe, you know, that's great stuff.
Well, yeah, as soon as we've finished all 100 climbs, we can definitely feel free to leave the country at that point, right? But are you wanting to holiday in the UK?
Yeah, I'm actually going to go around Wales, North Wales, at the end of August.
What do you do with a canal boat, though?
Oh, just leave it.
Okay. They don't exactly...
I don't know what I'm going to do in Wales, Ben.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Two particularly interesting parts of this trip.
Yeah.
Going to see the oldest tree in the United Kingdom.
Okay, you need to tell me more about that. Go on.
Right, bear with. Just find the name of it. It's a yew.
How did you know about this tree?
I'm glad you asked. You know how you just go on a bit of a Wikipedia hole?
Yeah.
Well, I was on the oldest trees in the world article.
Naturally, yep.
And I was just looking at all the oldest trees in the world. I was like, that's pretty old. I wonder what the oldest tree in the UK is. And you can, they've actually ordered them by country. And the list of oldest trees also up there is... List of notable pigs. That's very good.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
I'm just stalling. I'm getting there. Yeah. The Llangenwi ewe.
Easy for you to say. And how old is it?
4,000 to 5,000 years old.
Wow. That is quite old. I'll give you that, Ed.
But it's Google reviews. Only 3 people have reviewed the tree. One chap gave it 4 stars. Which is not on.
What brought it down from 5?
Let's have a look. Oh, sorry. Right, we got 1 3-star review.
And what was the 3-star review saying?
Interesting to see and touch a living thing that has been around for such a long time. Not that interesting. Clearly, Martin.
Bloody Martin. 3 stars.
51 reviews he's left as well. I want to know what Martin finds more interesting than the oldest tree.
Oh, we're going down a rabbit hole here, aren't we? No witch hunts, please. No witch hunts. We don't want to send all 3 of our listeners onto Martin here.
He doesn't give much 5-star. Here we go. No, that's boring.
So what else are you going to do in Wales?
Just pubs. I'm going to buy a cardigan from Cardigan.
What?
Yeah, a place called Cardigan.
What is that?
In Wales. Well, it's a place.
Oh, it's actually the place is called Cardigan.
Yeah, I'm going to buy a cardigan from there. Even if they don't have a cardigan shop, I'll just pop on Gumtree and like look for...
Surely they have a cardigan shop in Cardigan.
Yeah, I mean, you're missing a tree. If they don't have one, I'll open one. Like, you remember we went to Bakewell?
Yeah.
They sell Bakewells.
Well, yeah, they are well known for their Bakewell tarts. Hang on, though. This cardigan, can we just make sure that it's not like the last cardigan that you got?
Oh, the one that the charming Camden man sold.
The one that you were conned into buying in Camden, and it was like Joseph in his Technicolor dream coat.
He said I look great.
Mate, you didn't, though. That was something else.
But, I have been known to be gullible.
Yeah.
However, I really believed him when he said I look great.
Have we got a picture of that?
No, don't.
I can't dig one out.
I'm just glad I don't have Facebook anymore, so.
Yeah, so I don't think we have one, unfortunately.
But just imagine Joseph's Technicolor dream coat that your nan's made, except your nan's partially sighted and saw the film 5 years ago.
It looked like the kind of thing, like imagine a car boot sale that's ran by hippies and you come to about 3 o'clock in the afternoon when they're just about to close the gate and it's still out there on someone's fold-out table. That's probably the best description I can give of it.
He gave me 50% off.
Yeah, and 50% off what, though?
Off the price in his head.
Yeah.
He said, just for you, sir, just for you. Half price.
He saw you coming.
So great, innit?
He saw you coming. Shall we just finish on briefly, Ed? During this lockdown period, at one point you just sent me an email which just said, had the subject line, correspondence chess.
I'm really upset about this.
Okay. So you sent me an email with the subject line, correspondence chess, and it was a chessboard and you'd made a move. So we went back and forth on that for a while. And
yeah, and just for a bit of context, when people used to send letters to each other and the internet wasn't a thing, you know, people used to keep a chessboard in each house with a game that's going on, and you send a letter and, you know, for your move, and these games would go on for months, if not years.
Yeah. So we never actually finished that game. But what did happen was you kind of got me, I don't want to say back into chess because I was never properly into chess, but you've got me into chess, like in a big way. And I've been playing quite a lot of it since.
Benny Fisher.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, that's for sure. So we've been playing on chess.com, although I do play a bit on Lee Chess as well, which is Lee Chess, LICHESS.org.
I did not know this.
So Lee Chess is actually, I think it's better than chess.com because it's got a bunch of free puzzles. It's got, basically, it's all free and open source. I think you should check that out instead.
But I think chess.com's got kind of the biggest following, hasn't it?
Yeah.
You kind of have to go where the crowd is.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, chess.com is like the Apple of the chess world, and then like Lee Chess is like the Linux of the chess world, where, you know, it's probably not as polished, but...
I think my boy Magnus uses chess.com.
No, he doesn't. He famously doesn't. So Magnus Carlsen is the world champion chess player, and he actually... There was a tweet a while back. Every single sub-community I found out has its own drama, and the chess community is no stranger to this either. I mean, a game that's thousands of years old and played over a board, and there's so much drama around it, but I'm not going to go into all that because it's quite sad and boring. But you and I have been playing correspondence chess, which is, again, you get like, what, one day per move?
I mean, I've got to give it to you. You're good. You know, I can make my excuses. You know, I prefer a shorter game.
Yeah.
We've been playing daily, haven't we? So you've got a day to make each move.
Yeah.
But fair play to you, Ben. I think you've won all the games.
Do you want me to bring up the chess record? Hang on.
No, don't need to do that.
So I've won 17 games and you've won none.
God, I did all the 17 games.
Yeah. You know what your problem is,
though? Yeah, well, you're a SWAT, aren't you? No, you know what your problem is, Ben? You're a bloody SWAT.
You know what your problem is, though, Ed?
Yeah?
You're a shit at chess. Too easy. No, your problem is that you always just throw your queen out there with absolute reckless abandon. It's ridiculous.
I'd like to play aggressively. You know, you're just like, it's like peacocking.
Yeah, but then...
You're like, and what?
But then I take your queen and I'm like 9 pawns up and every game you're like, oh. And you just lose all motivation.
Yeah, when my queen goes, I just get sad.
Yeah, and you just throw everything at the wall and it doesn't stick. Especially with correspondence chess, you need to take your time.
So can I ask about your trade? What have you done? Have you sort of studied the openings? Have you memorized them or you just looked them up?
No, I don't worry too much about the openings. So openings, for those who don't know, it's just like a set bunch of moves that you use to open the game with. And there's a bunch of famous ones. There's like the Sicilian defense. And
because they're sort of so common, there's only so many combinations of moves you can do in the first few moves. It's quite easy to memorize those.
And they've all got different strengths, the opening moves as well. And they've all got like set counterattacks and things like that as well. What I do find quite funny about these openings, though, I mean, I haven't memorized many of them. And it is quite worthwhile, but I think it's more one of those things where once you get over a certain chess rating, that's when it becomes more beneficial. But is that... Yeah. So you're playing on chess.com and you do your opening moves and you're not really actually like doing an opening. But every single combination of moves basically at the start, like you say, has a name because chess has been around for so long that they've all been named after something at some point, right? Someone was famous for playing that. And what's quite funny now is like, so most of the openings like historically have been like Queen's Gambit, like King's Indian and stuff like that, Accelerated Dragon. So they're all like, I don't want to say regal names, but they're all quite proper names, yeah? And then there's kind of like this new breed of chess player, well, newish anyway, who are streaming on Twitch 24/7 and, you know, they've kind of got that esports thing going on. And then some of the new openings are ridiculous and they just do them to showboat. And like, for example, one of them's called Bong Cloud. So I just love that this game has gone thousands of years having these regal names. And then, you know, there's this new breed out there that just
disrespecting it.
Yeah, they don't take it as seriously as their predecessors do. So look up Bong Cloud opening. And it tends to be one that grandmasters do to kind of showboat because you waste a bunch of moves to start the game and then you start playing. What I do find interesting as well, again, this is kind of going into nerd corner just for a moment here. So most people, well, not most people, a lot of people will know about Garry Kasparov, who was grandmaster, world champion for however many years back in, I think it was the 90s, maybe the late 80s, famous chess player. And he was famous as well for, he played, was it Deep Blue by IBM? So that was the chess computer.
Oh, yes.
Supercomputer that IBM put together. And he was famous because he got beat by this supercomputer. And he was kind of like one of the first grandmasters to get beaten by a computer. But before that, basically all of the best players could still beat computers quite routinely. But nowadays, the chess engines are so, so good that grandmasters just play them just for practice because they know they're going to get beaten by them. But they just do it anyway just to get some practice in, like basically against someone who's better than them.
Do you know what? That's interesting because I know we're not, this is an AI podcast, but in other fields, when they're doing a similar thing where AI can outperform professionals, they're using it as training tools. So in ophthalmology, we are looking at sort of trying to diagnose diabetic retinopathy, which is basically just the blood vessels getting damaged in your eye. The computer can do that better now. It takes like 12 years to train a clinical specialist to a really good degree. So now they're just going to use this to accelerate training. You know, it can tell you, okay, yep, that's a correct example. That's wrong.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's kind of like scary in a way, though, that we're training computers to be so good at these things. Whereas like, you know, we've got this, the game of chess is thousands of years old, like I say, and the knowledge of the game has progressed so much, but then all of a sudden there's basically the game of chess is subdivided into pre-engine and post-engine, post-chess engine being obviously we've got a good enough engine that can beat all of humans. And now there used to be like Deep Blue used to be this massive computer mainframe. Like you're talking, I don't know, a massive football pitch sized room or something of computers just whirring away in the background just to beat one man. But now you've got like the world's best chess player can have his mobile phone and get beaten by it consistently. Just he would never win against it.
It's insane. And what's interesting is that at the time, you know, they thought that signified the start of generalized artificial intelligence or general artificial intelligence. Every time, you know, something like this happens, these benchmarks that are quite public, people think, okay, that's it. You know, the same happened with AlphaGo and it'll keep on happening.
Yeah. AlphaGo, they've done this one that's similar to AlphaGo, because how most chess engines work is, I'm not an AI specialist and I'm not particularly computer algorithm or structures, data structures specialist either, but my understanding is it basically evaluates every single move that you could do, which generates a whole tree of other possible moves that your opponent could do, which generates another tree of the moves that you could do back. And with each set of those, like those trees, which go into more and more subdivisions, they assign a, you know, how many pawns up you are on your opponent. So they can weight all of the different trees, and they basically say whichever tree is best is obviously the one that the computer's going to go with. But they can do, like, you know, a human can analyze however many moves a second looking at the board. Computers can analyze thousands and thousands and thousands of these positions in a second and all of the different permutations that arise from those positions and those moves. So it's mad.
Apparently, computer moves are very odd. Apparently, they're quite characteristic. So if you're playing a computer, they'll make something which seems very amateurish or strange because they know that 15 moves down the line, based on how they think you're going to respond, that will work out in their favor. Whereas a human wouldn't think that far ahead. So moves can look very computer-esque. So, like, sometimes people would say, oh, that's a computer move. That's a weird one.
Yeah. I think Kasparov even said when he played Deep Blue that he kind of thought that there was some tomfoolery going on, because some of the moves that Deep Blue pulled out were like very strange. And I think he basically was saying that, is there some human input on this kind of guiding the moves? And it's not all computer based, but I'm pretty sure it was all computer based. So, but yeah, everyone should go play chess because it's a fun game. It's free to play. It's been around for a long time. I think that the devs are going to continue to support chess, you know, for the foreseeable future. Get on Lee Chess or chess.com. I'm Kai Asmada on both.
Not many updates, but, you know, I think replayability.
Well, actually, another thing, just before we finish talking about chess, if everyone hasn't tuned out already, there are actually quite a lot of variants and updates that they've made to chess. So there's things like anti-chess, so if you go on Lee Chess, they've got loads of different chess variants that you can play. So you and I played a variant called Chess 960, which is basically you've got your line of pawns as normal, but then your back rank with all of your minor pieces and your king and your queen, that's completely randomized, right? So that variant's been around for quite a while now. Bobby Fischer made that back in the 90s. This is now an officially just a solely chess-based podcast now. But there's a bunch of different variants that Lee Chess has implemented. So they've got things like anti-chess is one of them, which is where you try and get all of your pieces captured as fast as possible. So it's like the opposite of chess. They've got things like King of the Hill, which is where whoever gets their king to the center four squares on the board wins. Whoever does it first.
Wow.
They've got things like Horde, which is like one side has their normal piece structure and then the other side just has like four ranks of pawns. And then there's things like Atomic Chess, where I think if you take a piece, I can't really remember the rules exactly, but when you take a piece, it destroys that piece, your piece, and then whatever's in the squares around that piece. So the games are really quick.
Damn.
And we should also mention as well that you don't just have to play correspondence chess, which is one move, two moves, one day, 2 days, 7 days, whatever per move. You can also play on these websites normal, like traditional chess, which is like 30 minutes on the clock for each player. You've got 10-minute chess.
Well, yeah, I mean, I play almost exclusively 5-minute chess.
Yeah. So is that Blitz?
You've got 5 minutes here or there. Yeah.
That's Blitz chess, right? And well, you've got rapid chess, which I think is under 10 minutes and under. You've got Blitz chess, which I think is 5 minutes and under. And then you've got bullet chess, which I think is 3 minutes and under. Or is it 1 minute and under? And you know, there's some actual mad people out there as well who play Super Bullet. Have you heard of this?
No.
Super Bullet is 15 seconds per side.
Did they have to mate? It was just material advantage.
Well, it's obviously it's against the clock. So whoever can what they call flag the opponent the most, i.e. keep moving and not get mated, if you can keep your timer much higher than your opponent's, you're in luck. I don't think there's many mates get made.
Yeah, because sometimes I just give up. I give up and I say, right, I'm just going to win on time.
Yeah. But there's plenty of good chess stuff out there, and I highly advise everyone to play. Like I say, I'm Kai Asmata on both chess.com and Lee Chess. If anyone wants to play me, I'm more than happy to.
And I am EPA Barker.
And if anyone wants to beat Ed, you can play him on chess.com as EPA Barker.
You'll probably win. By yourself.
And you should join Lee Chess as well, Ed.
Cool.
Right.